WRNB Media Philadelphia. It's old school 100.3. Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-263-1003. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now, here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman, and this is your hour to ask legal questions one at a time till your heart's content. It's Sunday morning, June the 30th. Hard to believe, but half the year has gone. That's a unbelievable fact. Half the year is gone. It's June the 30th. We're about to begin July, God willing, and it is kind of cloudy and overcast in Philadelphia right now, folks. So we're going to begin the show by my introducing my co-host, the one and only David M. Rappaport.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. We always start the show by introducing you.
And I get applause every time, as I should.
There you go. Well,
sometimes rousing, sometimes not so rousing.
There you go.
That wasn't very rousing, actually. But, oh, there you go. Ah, my adoring crowd. Wow.
They're really screaming now.
Oh, my God.
Okay. It's enough, folks.
The police is, wow.
Calm down. Calm down. David's here every Sunday. You can come back again next week.
That's right.
Okay, so we're here on this beautiful Sunday, and if you'd like to give us a call, we're available to you at 215-263-1003. That's right. You've been sitting on that legal question or that political issue for a week or two and wondering what to do about it. Well, now's your chance, 215-263-1003. If you miss us in the studio today, you can always get me throughout the week at 215-227-2727. And what's going on in Philly or the legal world, David?
The legal world. What's going on in the legal world? Well, first, what's going on in Philly?
Go for it.
I know that the Phillies made amazing comeback in the ninth inning and then lost.
To the Dodgers.
Yeah, at the Dodgers made a even better comeback after they lost their lead. So it was kind of a disappointing game. I just happened to catch the end of it, which was the worst part of it, because we made it a pretty cool comeback and looked like we were going to win. And then, so everyone who knows the Phillies knows what happened last night with that.
Speaking of the Phillies, Darren Dalton.
Oh yeah, Darren Dalton
is in the ICU. And has inoperable brain cancer.
Well, it was. I don't know if they know it was cancer. They said there was two tumors. One is inoperable, and one they operated on, or they're going to operate very quickly on. I guess they have to check and see if it's cancer, or they biopsy it. But I guess a tumor usually in the brain. I don't, you know if there's many benign tumors in the brain.
Well, there are.
It's a shame, though.
Yeah, it is. And of course, Darren was. A member of the team in
catcher.
Yep, and in 93 and well, actually 83, I believe.
80, yeah,
when the team won the World Series, and he's 51, and he's really a staple of Philadelphia. You know, a lot of sports folks, they come into the city and they play here, but it's their work, and then they go back home, wherever home is. Seems like Darren has always been a part of the Philadelphia landscape since his days as a Philly.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we'll send our prayers out to Darren and his family and hope that all goes well for him. That covers the
now the legal realm,
the local scene,
local scene, unlegal related.
Yes,
legal related. What's going on in Philadelphia? Legal related.
Well, we still have a grand jury impaneled for the building collapse.
The collapse, yeah. That's going to be ongoing for a long time.
Yeah, it doesn't look like there's a lot of a lot of coverage for those who are the most devastated by that loss, those who have lost their lives, and those who may have to carry injuries for the rest of their life. You know, when it comes down to it, and really this is going to segue slightly into our hot button topic for today. what happens when there's a loss and there's just insufficient assets or funds or insurance to compensate the victims?
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, it's the victims who suffer in the in those instances. And I bring up a topic we were talking about last week, and I can't talk about it enough. I seem to have a spate of of new cases in the last 2 weeks where folks are really injured, catastrophically injured, and in auto accidents, and they just don't have any or very little uninsured or underinsured motorist protection.
Yep.
We keep talking about this and talking about this.
But, you know, it bleeds into everything that we do, because I think it bleeds over into the medical malpractice area as well, because we require, see, there it's regulated. We require doctors and hospitals to have insurance. But then when something goes wrong, they fight. And they fight and fight and fight. And I never understand it, because insurance is there just for the specific purpose of compensating a victim of something that goes wrong. It instead of punishing the doctor, punishing the hospital, they bought insurance to cover themselves for this. But then when you say, okay, now you screwed up, we need to be compensated, they fight to the death. You could have a severed head, and they still will fight that you don't have a severed head. And we allow that.
Well, you know, I will say this. I agree with you that they fight, but it's the they that I'm not so sure about.
They is the insurance company.
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear.
It isn't the doctors.
No, not at all. It's not the doctors.
Yeah.
Usually. It's the insurance companies.
Right. Well, they're evil. You know, I mean, I guess. And, you know, although occasionally I'll come across an adjuster who says, look, if we owe it, we're going to pay it.
And that's very rare.
And we're going to pay fair. And, you know, that makes everything go easier.
A rarity indeed.
Let's take a couple of calls. We're already hitting a wall here. 215-263-1003. You got legal issues. We got questions, or we got answers to your questions.
They have questions.
Jackie from Philly. Hi, Jackie. Welcome to Core Radio.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're okay. Well, thanks. What's your question? Issue? What's going
on?
My
issue is that my grandson had attended daycare for his first day. My daughter had paid for it a week. I guess it goes by weekly or 2 weeks. Anyway, she paid for that. She took him to the daycare. When she went to pick him up at the end of the day, which is closing, which is 6 o'clock, he had a bruise on his face, a big red bruise. They told her that he had laid on an object and went to sleep. So when she brought him in and I looked at him, I said, this can't be true. So we took pictures of it and everything, and I took it and showed it to a couple of people that I know that work in the medical field, and they were telling me, no, that's not it. He was hit, and he was hit hard. I want to know what I can do about that.
Well, how old's your grandson?
7 months.
Okay. Well, he's not going to be able to be a witness for you one way or the other. Well, if you have medical documentation that supports that this is an assault, you know, and it was there that long that he came home, it remained there, you photographed it. I mean,
photographed it again at 5 in the morning.
Wow. It sounds to me like it's maybe something you want to report to the police. If there's not going to be a report, you need to make one yourself. And not that I expect that anything's going to happen about that probably, but they will at least document, and you know, maybe they'll investigate it. As far as a personal injury case goes, one has a personal injury case when there's negligence or an intentional act, one or the other, and an injury. And it really would depend if what turns out to be the bruise turns out to be more than just a bruise, and well, if there is ongoing medical treatment, God forbid if it was a fracture, if you combine the either intentional act or the negligence with a documented injury that impacts one's life, then you begin to have what amounts to a personal injury case. Usually, if let's say the next day he was fine, there was absolutely no consequences from a medical standpoint, I would say, nah, it's probably not worth pursuing from a personal injury standpoint. Of course, it goes without saying that if you've lost faith in the place, you want to be out of there. So I guess it goes without saying that you'll move on to another place, because you wouldn't bring your kid back or your grandson back to a place where you believe they've treated him poorly. at least, you know, in disregard to his well-being, if not an intentional act. So anyway, I hope that helps you. Thanks for calling us on Sunday morning, and have a great day, dear.
You too.
All right. All right, let's try Connie, who's calling in from New Jersey. Hello, Connie.
Good morning.
Good morning, and welcome to Court Radio.
Thank you.
So what's going on in Connie's life?
I'm calling because I had a healthy tooth removed by mistake.
Okay, and well, it's not as bad as having a healthy arm removed.
Which yeah. tooth, though? Was it in the front? Was it in the molars? Was it in the side?
It was in the upper left side.
Okay. Was it visible from if you smiled?
No.
Okay. So what happened? They were supposed to take out one tooth, but they took out the other by accident?
Right.
Okay.
And
go ahead.
I'm just wondering, if I went to a lawyer about it,
mm-hmm.
and got my file, and I couldn't really read what it was stated, the medical term. I had x-rays and everything sent to me. I paid for it, and they sent me my file, and I sent it to the lawyer. And she never got back to me. She just told me that I had a lot of other tooth already removed. But they were bad tooth. They weren't a healthy tooth.
Right. Well, what the lawyer's saying, okay, and so, you know, lawyers never want to tell clients the truth sometimes. It's just amazing to me. Here it is. You have a mouthful of bad teeth. Pop, pop, pop. A few teeth are missing, and now you've got one tooth that's good, and they take it out. And you're right. It was negligence. Now, what's it worth, though? What's the damages for the loss of a single good tooth when you have a mouthful of teeth that have been decayed over time and you've lost them? Not much. I mean, you know, first of all, nowadays, for a few $1,000, you can get an implant. Okay, so you technically could get a tooth. It looks like a tooth. It feels like a tooth. It's permanent. You don't have to take it out to replace the tooth they took out. So theoretically, your damages, when we talk about damages, are a few $1,000 for the taking, or maybe even $5,000, maybe even $8,000 or $9,000 or $10,000. It isn't worth any more than that. And one has to, as David, we started this show, we talked about they fight, right?
Right.
Insurance companies always fight, even on the most obvious cases. So they're going to fight you on it. You're going to have to get another dentist to be a witness against the first dentist. Some radiologist or dentist is going to have to review the films and say the tooth was absolutely healthy and shouldn't have been removed, and so on and so forth. And all of that costs money. And so what the lawyer is telling you by not calling you back is, your case is worth not enough for me to invest my money into it to help you get $5,000 or $10,000. Because at the end of the day, I'm not going to get my money back that I've used and invested to prove your case. But lawyers don't want to tell clients that. They're afraid your reaction is going to be anger or something. I don't know. But I have no problem telling a client you don't have a case, or you have a case, but it's just not big enough to warrant going after anybody. So that's the way it is, dear. Connie, I thank you for calling Court Radio. I wish I could have given you better news, but at least you won't have to fret about this anymore.
Okay.
All right. Be well.
Thank you.
See? Boom. Done. Yeah. Connie, enjoy your one less tooth in your mouth.
But that's why I asked, you know, where it was. If it's in the front, you might have more of an argument. Who knows, you know, because the smile you
got. Here's the case. I've never seen a dental malpractice case that actually was worth the baking the cake over.
My career, I only had one so far that was.
Remember, yeah, they took like the whole jaw.
Yeah, but if you remember that, we worked on that together. We lost that case.
Right.
And that was, we didn't, I shouldn't say we lost the case. The doctor was found not to be negligent, and I disagree with that, but he apparently, you know, they felt that he was doing the right thing.
I think there were some other issues. It's a long time ago.
There were a lot of issues. Smoking was one of the issues. The person was a smoker, and that bones don't heal well when you smoke, and especially small bones, like jaw bones and stuff
right.
like that.
And was just some lying going on or something?
Yeah, there was a lot of issues.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now,
that was a long time ago. We were.
This was your client, right?
No, it was your client, but we worked on it together.
Okay.
It was not my client. It was. Right. I think I had to work with some. I don't remember, but it was. This was. We're talking 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 215-263-1003. We're hit up. We'll take one more call and then we'll move on. Okay. Let's talk to Janae from Alani. Good morning, Janae, and welcome to Core Radio.
Good morning.
So, how are you today?
Pretty good. And yourself?
I'm well, thanks. What gets you up so early in the morning?
Well, I'm always up early in the morning.
There you go. Is this the first time you're listening to Core Radio?
It is, actually. Uh-huh. It's actually pretty good timing.
Perfect timing. All right, what's your issue?
About a month ago, I was terminated from my employer. In my opinion and the opinion of my counterparts, I was wrongfully terminated. I worked for Walmart.
Janae, let me just interject one question here. When you use the term, it's a term of art for us, for David and I, wrongful termination.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Do you mean that you really were a good employee and didn't deserve to lose your job?
Right.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So what you're not saying is that they fired you or terminated you. I like that. Well, what is it? It's fired or terminated? It's fired. You were fired.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They didn't fire you because your name begins with a J, or that you're a girl, or that the color of your skin, or who you sleep with. No.
Okay. Let me finish explaining to you what happened. That's why I think I was wrongfully terminated.
Okay.
I know that you guys' terminology, so I guess if it doesn't fall between like race, religion, gender.
Fire you for any reason.
If it doesn't fall into one of those protected classes,
okay,
then Pennsylvania doesn't recognize wrongful termination. In other words, there is no such thing legally. And that's not to say you weren't wrongfully terminated, because you probably were a great employee, but they don't recognize it as a legal issue unless you fall into one of those protected classes.
Okay. Now, in my situation, I stayed late to assist another associate because they had gotten to the habit of understaffing. So we had an issue where one of my coworkers was robbed. So I got off at 8 o'clock that particular night. Our department stayed open until 10 to do all the cleaning and everything else. I volunteered to stay late in order to help her. The next morning when I came in, some things that weren't really my responsibility wasn't completed. So when I came in, I got written up and fired for it. And I'm like, but had I left at my designated time, me and you wouldn't be having this conversation. And I wasn't the they call it a closing supervisor, but it's really just an associate who closed. And those fall under their regulations. They print out this list of things that we're all supposed to do, and none of the things that was designated unfit were my responsibility also. And when I brought that to their attention, they were like, well, we're holding everybody accountable.
Okay.
I'm like, let me
interject here just for a second, because we've talked about this many times, and I know you haven't listened before, but let's be very clear here. Okay, there's only, as Dean said, a certain number of circumstances that you can be quote-unquote wrongfully terminated. They're the designated discriminatory classes, okay? Or if you have a contract with your employer that designates how they can hire and fire you and what process they go through, or you're a member of a union and there's a grievance process, that kind of stuff. If all those things are not there, it doesn't matter. Your story, while compelling and while you're probably right, they were wrong and they got bad information and shouldn't have fired you, doesn't matter. Okay, I hate to be blunt, but it doesn't matter. You can come in one day and they could just say, you know, we just don't like what you look like. You're wearing something, you know, we don't like your pants. Yeah. But you're fired. And you can't do anything about it. You can't do anything about it. That's it. It's their right. They're your employer. They can decide when to hire and fire people, unless they're bound by certain regulations in their industry or a contract or something like that. Now, you said Walmart, so there probably is a contract or an employee handbook, I would think, and you have a grievance process you can go through, I would suspect. Am I right or am I wrong?
Right.
So you have to go through that in order to challenge your termination. Did they follow all the rules to terminate you? And if they did, then you're out of luck, regardless of why they did it.
Okay.
Here's one last thing. If you do have a case, and this is just general law for wrongful termination cases, if you do have a case, let's say that there's specific ways they're supposed to let you go, or there's specific reasons, and it's in this employee handbook, and you can hold this up and say, see, you didn't even follow your own rules. Well, then you might have a case. However, you have a duty to mitigate your damages. So what does that mean? That means that you have to continue to go out and try to find other employment, because 3 months or 6 months from now, when you actually went into court or somebody heard your grievance, you aren't going to get paid for your time unless you can show that you took active steps to mitigate or reduce your damages by getting another job. All right?
I already have another job.
There you go.
Hey.
So then the question is, what are your damages?
Right.
And, damages would be the month of no type of financial. I recently got a house. I recently started paying rent. I self-sustained, and that termination and that gap between my new job starting to pay me and my old job stopping to pay me, it's been about a month now.
Right, so it's a month worth of damages. Whatever you earn in a month, whether let's say it's $2,000 or $3,000 for that month, that's your damages. That's a small claims matter, and one in which, if you really felt strongly and you thought you had some documents that they violated their own rules, then you could bring them. You could bring Walmart to court down in municipal court in Philadelphia. And you could do it yourself, and you could have your day in court and have a judge decide whether they did break their own rules. If they did, if they broke their own rules and you have it in writing, I would say, well, you really got nothing to lose and everything to gain by giving it a shot. And Walmart might just throw a little money at you to get rid of you. All right. Thanks for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday.
You too.
All right. 215-263-1003. We've got a hot button topic, as we usually do. We have a guest in the studio, David.
Yes, we do. We are privileged to have this guest.
We are. He is William P. Period Richard, also known as Bill. Hey, Bill, how are you?
How are you, Dean? Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Bill, folks are out there, who's Bill Richard? Bill Richard is an EMT extraordinaire. He was a first responder for a fire that happened a long time ago in Chester, Pennsylvania, and is referred to as the Chester Toxic Fire of 78. And it was the biggest toxic waste dump in this area.
Yes, it was.
I think in U.S. history, although does that still hold, or is it probably?
Well, not exactly. Yeah. There's probably some, but when you get up into that size, what's it matter?
Exactly. Who cares? It's still huge.
This was like a, let me see here, it was called the Eastern Rubber Reclaiming Plant, or also known as the Wade Dump. It had millions of gallons of illegally dumped cyanide, PCBs. Back then, you remember, David, when they would come through the neighborhood and spray for mosquitoes, and we would chase that little truck with a...
DEET.
It's amazing that we're still here, but, I guess they didn't regulate as well then as they do now. Do you think that there's still a problem in regulation, Bill?
Well, as far as the regulation, let me just back up to a little bit. There wasn't any mosquitoes down at Wade Dump, I can assure you of that when we're down there.
Yeah, nothing could live there, right?
It certainly wasn't. But it happened on February 2nd, 1978, and that day was a day that we thought we were getting off to a pretty good start. Chester is a pretty economically depressed area. We just built a new fire station at 3rd and Tillman. And in fact, February 2nd was the first day we had it opened. And I happened to be on duty that day. And my job in the morning was to move some of our furniture in our ambulances down to the new fire station. And as we went down there, we saw some black smoke that was coming up from the area. And we thought, well, that's Eastern Rubber Reclaiming Plant. It's a place where they reprocess tires. Been around there since 1940, and we've been in tire fires a number of times then. I wasn't at any fires in 1940, fortunate to say. But that day we saw the smoke coming up, and sure enough, in the afternoon, we got the alarm and we went down there, except it was different this time. Normally, tire fires are very black and very smoky and just...
Do you have respirators on at this point?
No, absolutely not.
Would that have helped?
Respirators would have helped during this fire. Yes, they would have if we'd had them. We had a few on some of the trucks, But really, for the police and the EMS personnel, there was no respirators for them at all.
That's usually for the firefighters.
Firefighters. And even in those days, it was pretty much, you know, iron lungs. You know, you smoke a cigar when you come out, you throw up, and you go back in.
What you're talking about, I think the key here is when you go there, no one had a recognition of what it was.
No.
You thought it was a tire fire.
No, the first indication we got was the smell was different because it was like a sweet smell, then a very acrid smell. And then the smoke was different. It was like purple and took on different color hues. And we thought, well, that's certainly not normal. But we also knew that some of the chemicals were involved in a reprocessing of the tires might cause some problems. Well, the first engine crew that went in there, when they came out, their bunker gear was actually disintegrating on them. And we'd hose them down, put a new bunker coat on them, and pat them on the back and send them back in. And that's pretty much the way it went for most of the day. Some of the crew actually fell into one of the vats. We had one fellow who was subsequently has died years later, but he had fallen into a vat of chemicals, and one of our captains had to reach in there and actually pull him out to rescue him. And so it was very desperate. We saw the ground actually blowing up. It was like there was...
But see, most of the folks who engaged that fire didn't really suffer the consequences for some period of time.
That's right. We transported about 45 to area hospitals between Sacred Heart and Crozier. And most of them were just for minor respiratory problems, skin rashes, had a couple chest pains, were discharged the next morning. So there was nothing that was really acute that anybody had to be treated for. All this came years later after we found out what was down there. And indeed, there was 49 companies that were involved in having their waste dumped down there. There was at least 21 carcinogens, 5 heavy metals. And all told, there's 3 million gallons that were down there between the drums and the tanker cars that were down there.
And Bill, you made a settlement for your claim, and we're going to talk about that as soon as we get back. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk to Bill about his settlement from this Wade dump and how that's affected or not affected his life. We'll be back in 2 minutes after these sponsor breaks. 215-263-1003. When we come back, we're taking your calls, too. If you're on the line, stand by.
If you've been injured in an automobile accident, you know what matters. Being able to afford medical care, providing for your family while you're out of work, knowing your rights and getting just compensation. These things matter. That's why your attorney matters. I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. If you've been injured in an auto or truck-related accident, My Philly Lawyer will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman, on Old School 100.3.
Welcome back. to Court Radio, and I am Dean Weitzman. If you've got legal questions, we've got legal answers. 215-263-1003 gets you into the studio. Let's talk to Paul from Southwest. Good morning, Paul. Welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. How you doing this morning? I'm just calling to recognize. I want some clarification. I had a case in 2010. It settled out, let's say, June 14th. It settled out. And then the other insurance company sent me some papers saying that your proceeds was okay, Mr. Moore. I want to know, how long does it take for a settlement? Does it take that long? I mean, once the check go to their company lawyer, then to my lawyer, how long is the process? I mean, it seems like I'm waiting forever. You know, it was the call I got, like, come sign me, they're ready to settle, and I did that. That was way back in May.
Yeah.
That's all I really want to know. I mean, I don't know the legal system or
well,
how it works.
Here's, you know what, it's a very general question, and unfortunately, it really depends on the very specific circumstances of your life and case. And what I mean by that is, normally, insurance companies have 20 days from the date that your lawyer gives the other side your release. They have 20 days in Philadelphia to produce the settlement check. And then it's only a matter of a few days and your lawyer disperses it. That's 99% of the time how it works. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, things don't go that way. And I'll give you a couple quick examples. One, I had a case I settled in January for a woman, and we settled it for, doesn't really matter how much, but it was, I think it was $30,000 or $40,000. The insurance company got a release, and they never sent a check. We sent a demand for that check again and again and again, and they just didn't send it. 60 days went by, and we filed a motion with the court demanding the funds. The court issued an order, and we sent the order to the attorney, and the insurance company still didn't deliver the funds. Another 60 days went by. We filed another motion, and they finally, after 4 months, sent us the funds. And the client was up in arms, rightfully so. We got an order for an additional, I don't know, $1,000 for interest and attorney's fees for having to go through that to get the money. That's one example where it took a little while. Another is when you have, let's say, child support, or you owe loans out on the file, or other things that the lawyer has to now negotiate. Maybe you owe a lien for medical expenses to a health insurance company. These are things we didn't have to deal with years ago, but now the law is that everybody gets to get their money's reimbursed. And so if you have a Blue Cross Blue Shield lien or you have a workers' comp lien, all of these parties need to participate. And these are conversations and settlement discussions that occur after the settlement, so to speak. And these could take time. So if any of that rings true, if any of that applies to you, whether it's child support or other types of liens, maybe your lawyer is, or DPW liens, maybe your lawyer is negotiating those additional liens to try to make sure that you get something out of, you know, what is maybe a small settlement. Again, these are the things that could take time. But if none of that applies, you got no liens, no workers' comp, no DPW, no health insurance, then from the time your attorney gets the money till the time you get it shouldn't be more than a week or two.
Right. That's what I want to say, that my daughter's 35 years old. I have no nothing, you know, no welfare, no medical, no nothing, because I work for the city of Philadelphia, of course. But matter of fact, the lady from the other insurance company, Independent Life, said that, well, your check was cut, Mr. Moore, and we had sent it to our lawyer, and our lawyer sent it to, was supposed to meet up with your lawyer. I said, well, that was like 30 days ago. I said, there's no progress. Maybe they didn't meet yet. She said, but I'm truthfully tell you that we did send the proceeds to the lawyer.
And you call your lawyer and you ask him, where's my money? And he or she says what?
The secretary said the lawyer get back with you, or he'll call you, or one lady said, well, you have 20, your case happened on the 28th. Your settlement was the 28th of May. I said, 28th of May, okay. 28th of June, give or take a few days. So I'm looking at maybe the first week of July. That's what I'm looking at.
Okay. Well, if it doesn't happen, then as is the case with all claims against lawyers, You can always contact the Pennsylvania Disciplinary Board, and that's the board that oversees lawyers when the lawyers don't do what the lawyers are supposed to do with regard to clients and their monies. So you always have an out, and so, you know, I'm not suggesting that this case warrants that, and I think that you need to give your lawyer an opportunity to make the distribution. But generally speaking, to those who are listening, if a lawyer that you've retained doesn't do the right thing, the Pennsylvania Disciplinary Board will make them do it pretty quickly. All right?
Thank you very much, sir.
Have a great
and very good show. I like listening to it every Sunday morning, so I want you to know that. Very good show.
Thank you. All right. 215-263-1003, and I thank the caller for his compliments. And Bill, we're back to Bill Richard, who was a first responder at the Wade dump in 78. You know, this was a common phrase, super fund. I mean, New Jersey put that term on the map. And really what it is nasty companies that put profit over people, and they want to just dump their crap in our backyards, and they don't care what the consequences are. Sometimes they know what the consequences are, and they still don't care what the consequences are. What happened here with you and the super funds?
Well, with this, like you say, the chemicals were dumped by the chemical companies there. Many of them were dumped at a very favorable rate, so they did very well on it. In fact, the person who owned the dump site would even dump the barrels into the ground with channels built to the Delaware River, so it would flow right into the river, and he'd resell the barrels and make money on that as well. What happened with us? Well, certainly afterwards, I came down with Hodgkin's disease some 2 years after the fire. Matter of fact, I got out of the hospital 1 week before I got married, and I can barely remember the marriage, but it seems to have worked out pretty well. We're still married. But many others have suffered much more grievous illnesses and injuries. One that really troubles me is another paramedic that was down at the scene with me and helped me with the triage of the injuries. And Don came down with brain cancer some years later. And it was so grievous. He would just lay up in his living room in a hospital bed for years. He just laid there with his family trying to take care of him. And there was just very small settlements for that. I don't remember what exactly Don got, but he ended up passing away. And I just spoke with his wife this week. She's trying to put her kids through college, and she's having so much trouble. She had to quit her job to take care of Don. And, you know, and there's no help because we can't even get hero scholarship funds for him, because the problem with a fire like this and in those days is proven causation by the fire. And in those days, you had to prove that chemical caused it. Now, I just mentioned that it was 3 million gallons, and I mentioned it was from 49 different companies. And I also mentioned that it was dumped out in the ground. Who on earth could ever say what chemical caused what cancer? It's impossible.
Right. 49 different companies dumping a myriad of chemicals into the ground, and something is, you know, as a group, the 200, you mentioned 200 people. Were there 200 people?
There was over 200 responders, probably around 250 responders. And that includes police, includes the firefighters, and includes the paramedics that were down there. But even the police came down. One interesting case was Chakrabarty was the health officer for the city of Philadelphia. If anybody knew what was down there, it was him. He was involved with 10 months previous. They took pictures of the dumping that was going on there. Nobody notified the fire department. Nobody notified the first responders what was going on down there. But yet, I still consider him a hero in the fact that when he found out the fire was down there, he left the function he was at in a suit and tie. He grabbed one of the police officers and said, "I want samples from every area." And he went around, took samples, categorized them. He ended up dying from the same type of disability that the police officer he took with him died from as well.
And you would think with all these companies that were involved, at least you know, you can't identify which chemical caused what, but you know that all of those companies were wrong. They were breaking the law in dumping, right?
That's correct.
So they all should have been required to put in adequate amount of funds to cover everyone's claim. But instead, it seems like not only did they grossly deflate the value of the claim and not compensate people properly, they sealed most of the settlements and gag orders so no one would know what happened.
Yes, and that was a tragedy in of itself.
Yeah.
There was a lot of fear among the in the law about who was going to sue who in those days, because there was some big settlements that apparently occurred. I don't remember what settlements, but there was some very, very large ones. I think there are more with dioxin chemicals. And so they were always afraid of that. And so they wanted to get a handle on that. And so it was a pressure of 49 very large companies putting the pressure on the judge. Interesting, the judge that handled the case had previously been a solicitor for the city of Chester.
Hmm.
And then he became the judge. When the settlement was made, the largest settlement was just over $100,000. And that was to a woman who still had children that she had to raise. She lost her husband. She had to get her kids through school. The sad part is when they gave the settlement out, they were told that if they ever mentioned about the settlement to any one of them, these companies could come back on them, and the records were sealed for what reason, I don't know, but we still can't get to them. So that's pretty tragic.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, it probably is worse back then, obviously, but it hasn't changed a lot.
No.
There's still a lot of confidential settlements and companies putting their force on to make the situation unknown to the public, so the public doesn't know what's going on. It still happens today, unfortunately.
It does. And fortunately, the CERCLA laws and the SARA laws help in that we now have some way that residents can find out what's in their area or first responders. There's should be community meetings that are held, I believe, monthly, where the companies would have to disclose what they have, what plans they have in place. And also some of the laws with following the chemicals from from the inception of the chemicals to the grave of the chemicals,
right.
It has to be followed now, and that's certainly helps with that.
Better, but we're still getting calls. This past week, we got two calls from unrelated people about toxic exposure to chemicals. One down in the south in a military facility. And one up here by a company that does business across many states. And the company, there's actually a whistleblower who's in touch with us regarding some of the wrongdoing of the company. And so this kind of devastation, this kind of disregard of human life is occurring today as well. And it's something that we have to be on guard for. Because it's the kids who are drinking the water who end up, you know, sick 50 years from now.
And speaking of kids, Dean, it wasn't just the first responders who were affected by this fire. There were homes that were in that area. We all remember how kids used to break underneath that fence, as any kid would. I mean, if you got your choice of clear water to play in or purple water, you're going to pick the purple water when you're 6 years old. And that's exactly what they did. And so whatever happened to them? Is there any follow-ups on them?
Yeah, and the answer is probably not. 215-263-1003. Let's take a couple callers. Steve from Philly. Hey, Steve, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Okay, the thing is this. I used to live in I'm still living in Philadelphia, but I had to move away from my house that I have owned. I had a neighbor who was torturing my family for years. I say between 3 to 5. I say 5 to 6 years. It was from racial discrimination to vandalism, exposing himself to the family. That we were writing on making numerous police reports. The police reports was turned over to the DA's office.
So
DA's office took the case.
What's the question? Go ahead.
My question is that can a person who If I took that person to the DA's office, or the DA's office took the case, and he won the case, can he be able to sue me as pro se?
Well, can you be sued for filing charges against somebody?
I guess, correct.
No. But, you know, that,
but anyone can sue anyone for anything.
Because ultimately, when charges are brought by the district attorney's office, it's under the name of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. If you're a witness, you're putting forth a claim, you don't decide who they get to prosecute. And if they choose to prosecute somebody for something that you've reported, then it's upon the district attorney's office at that point. It's not you as merely a witness. Thanks for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday. All right, let's try, who else do we want? Let's talk to Linda. We haven't had a Wilmington caller in a while. Hello, Linda. Welcome to Court Radio.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning to you, dear. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Oh, good. What's your question?
My question is, do I have a case, and should I fight this? And let me explain. Back a year ago, I found a check that was tucked away in one of my books for $2,000. Back in 2009 was the date on the check. It was drawn up on Geico Insurance. Bank of America's name was on it. My name and address was on the check. I didn't know where the check came from. I don't remember putting it there. So I did a little investigation, called Geico. They said that that was not a real check. And so then I called my insurance company, asked them if they sent me the check. There was nothing attached to the check. It was just like a regular check with everybody's name, and the person signed the check. So my daughter decided that we should call the insurance commission in Dover, Delaware, to find out if they could do some investigation. So 6 months later, I get a call from this representative who wants to see me, and we sit down and we talked about the situation, and I hand her over the check, showed her the check, and thought that she would do a little bit of an investigation, see where the check came from, who it belonged to, because Geico said it wasn't their check. So nevertheless, I never cashed a check. I gave it over to her, and a couple months later, she's coming back saying that I'm involved in some kind of insurance fraud. So she said, well, you could do this. You can sign this consent, pay $500, and this will all go away. And so my question is, do I have a case if I fight this?
Well, okay, the answer is probably. Based on your description to me, I would say you have a good defense. The question is, how did you come into custody of this check? And you don't really have to answer that. I mean, that's going to be for them to establish. But you have a check that, let us say, was fraudulently produced, and it's in your book, and it's made payable to you.
Yes.
And to the insurance company. And so the question is going to be, where did it come from? But they have to prove that. They have to prove that you were responsible for the creation of this check. I mean, if I created this check in your name and the insurance company's name and dropped it in your doorstep, you're nothing more than holding some evidence of insurance fraud that I did. So they have to be able to prove it's something that you did. I don't know all the facts. I'm sure there's more facts than you've described. But if it is something you had nothing to do with, you don't know how you got into custody of this check, then I can't see how they can prove that you had the intent to commit insurance fraud. And why do you think they're only offering you a deal, allegedly a deal, where you're paying $500 and it's kind of going to be swept under the rug? They're offering it because they don't really have a case, okay?
Yes.
So, but, now here's the but. If they somehow do prosecute you,
uh-huh,
you have the duty, the responsibility to defend yourself. And you may have to retain an attorney, and it may cost you a lot more. And so you have to weigh that decision. But you might say, you know what, Dean, I don't care what it costs me. I don't want to plead to anything that I didn't do, and I'm not comfortable doing this. And I'd
exactly.
say, and I would say, okay, all right, but okay, make sure you have an attorney on retainer who's ready to defend you if and when they actually do something about this. Though I think, what was the date on that check?
It was dated back in 2009.
Yeah, I don't even know. Well, I guess the statute of limitations has not yet run. It's an old story, and I don't think they're really going to probably do anything. But if they do, I can't stress enough how important it is to have an attorney representing you in such a scenario as you describe. Thanks for calling us, and I hope this works out well for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Wilmington, Delaware. That was a call from somebody seeking help. Help.
They all want help.
Help.
So Bill.
Yes.
What do you what do we take from this? What would be your final thoughts, you know?
What's the message you
want
to
get? What's the message that we want to get across here?
Well, the message is that this can happen again, and it does happen again. We don't have to look any further than Texas to see what happens.
That's right.
We don't have to look any further than Louisiana. And in fact, we don't have to look any further from our block for what happens. Many times, the people that are in the community know of things that are going on. It doesn't get relayed to the fire department. It's when we have official ways to be notified of things, very often that breaks down. But if the fire department, if EMS personnel, if the police can be more community-minded and get involved with some of the community and talk to them, they're going to pick up on some of these incidents, some of these storage areas or some of these shortcuts that maybe businesses might be taking.
Yeah, and I want to mention, let's be clear here, and I'm sure you're not the only one out of all of these first responders back then, but I know from your what we know about you, this didn't happen and then you laid down and said, oh, you know, woe is me, I didn't get what I deserved, and blah, blah. You've been still actively pursuing as a first responder and doing what you need to do.
Yes.
This is a testament to first responders, in my opinion. You know, this devastating thing happened, but you've won many awards. I'm looking here from the House of Representatives for Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, and you're still doing what you need to do. And we really, you know, I want to personally thank you for that. I know our listeners do as well.
Thank you.
We need more people like you who are willing to run toward the fire rather than away from it. You know what I'm saying? Even in light of what happened to you, it's pretty incredible to me, at least. Everyone else.
It's funny that you mentioned, Bill, Texas, because it's one of our favorite places not to go. There's really nothing good in that state. They have caps on damages down there. Talking about, if you're a victim of a Superfund or if you're a victim of a company's negligence in Texas.
Like that fire that they recently had.
Yeah.
That
you're capped at $200,000 for pain and suffering. And, you talk about the mom who had to raise children on her own, had to care for her dying husband, and who now has to struggle with putting them through college. And she would be capped at $200,000 in Texas. It's really, it just blows my mind that we care more about companies than we do people. The Supreme Court this week, four decisions in favor of companies and big business, four decisions where they had the opportunity to take care of individuals and they scoffed at that. That's the Supreme Court. That's the people who are looking out for us. They're not, Bill Richard, okay, who's running toward the fire, David.
No.
They're the Supreme Court who's running to hug the next, corporate entity who comes into the courtroom. It's disgusting. It really is.
It is.
You had mentioned how the records were sealed on this case. They were unsealed at one time. It was for the workers' comp insurance companies.
Oh, right, for them to look at them, right.
And sadly, the ones that got the settlements then had to pay back whatever workers' comp they got. So it went away from their settlements.
Right, so in other words, it's sealed, but to save the company money, we're going to allow you to look the company to look at all the records so you can get all your money back.
That's correct.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? Correct.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's
crazy.
I know it's summertime. We're not thinking about elections, but folks, this is the kind of stuff that you need to walk into the election booth with, because you know, who you put in office determines who's going to sit as judges, determines whose rights are going to be upheld and whose will be denigrated. And right now, the way we have it in America, corporations reign supreme. And it's the trial lawyers who fight for the individuals who have to deal with these laws that really have just devastated so many families in so many ways. Bill, I really want to thank you for coming out today to Court Radio and to talk. And what are you doing right now? Are you still working?
I'm still working. I'm doing training for paramedics and other medical personnel. So that's pretty much what I do. I don't go through the fire too much anymore. The old knees aren't working so well. But the mind's still working, so I do that. But I'm also working very hard to get a memorial. We'd like to have a memorial in the city. There was a committee that had been formed. They have some money for it, I believe. We'd like some help with that.
How do people get in touch with you to make a donation or to talk about getting involved in this memorial?
Well, they can contact me. My email address is bill.richard1@gmail.com. As far as collecting donations, I don't have the capacity to do that, and I don't know what's happened with that money. I would suggest that anybody donating money knows what they're given to.
There you go. Be careful with your donations.
Yes.
All right, Bill Richard, thanks for joining Court Radio, and have a great Sunday. We're going to be right back after this break.
It's the centerpiece of your Sunday. Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins. Sunday mornings, 8 a.m., we hear from elected officials, education and civic leaders, clergy and business movers and shakers. From corporate to community, Philly Speaks covers our region like no one else. Sunday mornings, tune in and call in 215-263-1003. We hear from all sides of the story, including yours. At 8 o'clock Sunday mornings, it's Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins, right here on Old School 100.3.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman, on Old School 100.3.
All right. David, it's almost a wrap.
We had our
show run by us, as usually it does. We had Bill Richard on, who was a victim of a toxic dump in Chester. And they're trying to build a
first
memorial.
Response.
You know, they're trying to build a memorial down there. It seems like there's so many bad things happening in Chester. This is an opportunity for the elected folks to show that they're not, you know, that good things can come from bad.
Why wouldn't they respond? None of them have responded yet
to doing
a memorial.
Talk about like a corporation like Harrah's down in Chester. They could easily get this thing jump started with a small donation corporate wise, you know, and there could be a memorial for the folks who lost their lives, and their lives were devastated by the dump in Chester.
Give back to the community.
Yeah.
Harrah's.
All Yeah. Call them out, David. All right, folks. We'll see you next Sunday. We want to thank you for being loyal listeners to Court Radio. David, thanks for joining me this Sunday.
Of course.
And we'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Have a great week.